Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
Live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. I'm your host, Lady Sue. And what do? When I'm not hosting Word of Mouth? Long walks on the beach, because that's where I want to be right now. Out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear on my show. Working with my clients, which include chefs, somms, big brands, startups, all those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Lucky you, you've tuned into the Baller Burger edition of Word of Mouth this morning. Today's in-studio guests on hashtag people we like, we'll welcome Daniel Holzman, chef owner of the Meatball Shop. And what's new in NYC? It continues to snow, and the Green Market didn't inspire me this week at all. So we're going to go somewhere far, far away before catching up with Daniel. Well, we've got Adam Fleischman, founder of Umami Burger, on the line from sunny Los Angeles. We'll talk about his many new projects, including Choco Chicken. That's right. That's chocolate-flavored fried chicken. So we have Adam on the line. Adam, are you there?
Hello, lady.
How are you?
Doing great.
Hey, thanks for taking the time so early your morning.
It is early.
So really good seeing you in LA, and then here in New York City, we had some good eats, and what a pleasure having you on. Before I ever even met you or heard of Umami Burger, I was already an umami seeker.
Cool.
So Choco Chicken. I will quote Jimmy Kimmel. He said, it's as if God has been reading my food journal. So tell me how that came about.
Well, I met these two Hollywood guys that have never been in food before, but they're very large food enthusiasts. In fact, one of them, he ate at all of the Zagat restaurants, 3,000 restaurants in L.A. He's the only guy to ever do that.
Uh-huh.
They were very serious, very serious eaters, but had never done a food concept, and they were involved in a TV show where that's about to come out about, you know, food for stoners, what they want to eat, and they loved fried chicken from their travels, so they wanted to do something with chocolate and chicken, and they thought that was a great idea, and they played around with it, and they had a recipe, and I thought it was pretty crazy, so I called them up and said, you know, I got to try your chicken, I want to see what you guys are working on, and lo and behold, we ended up collaborating.
Okay. Chocolate goes really well in so many savory things. I mean, Chris Jekyll has that aged duck and chocolate and treviso sauce on his pasta over at Alanda, which we tried. Why chocolate-flavored fried chicken? Like, why does that make so much sense and not any sense at all?
I think it made sense because there's a lot of fried chicken. You know, fried chicken has been done pretty traditionally. It hasn't been tinkered with a lot. So you have your, like, hot fried chicken and regular fried chicken. But nobody has really changed it enough to make it, you know, differentiated and stand out. And I felt like this recipe really took it in a new direction that really created a whole kind of new experience. And we were really excited to do that.
What are these two guys' names, and what did they do before they started working with you on the chicken?
They're in Hollywood. One guy is a movie producer.
Mm-hmm.
He does, like, Adam Sandler movies and comedies and TV stuff, you know, all dealing with comedy. So they're pretty lighthearted, fun guys, but they had never done a restaurant brand before with multi-unit, and that's what I'm about, so we wanted to to collaborate, and I worked on the recipe a little bit and added some even weirder ingredients to make it, you know,
some umami dust.
Very secret. Yeah, like umami dust. 5 years in, nobody's really figured out the recipe, so I feel like we tinker with stuff so that they're really unique recipes that can't be duplicated.
Mm-hmm. What are their names?
Sean Robbins
mm-hmm.
and Keith Praviti.
And what was the recipe development process like?
I like to do my recipe development pretty informally. We made it once at one of my restaurants at Umami, and that's what kind of sparked the initial thing. And then we made it again at my test kitchen. It turned out really well. We try and mess it up a bunch of times. And then we made it for investors, potential investors, in the actual space, in the restaurant space that we leased in downtown L.A. And that's when we really, you know, feel like we got it dialed in, and everybody was really blown away. So mm-hmm. that was exciting. They got to taste the biscuits and the desserts and the drinks and the sides, and we have these three original sauces we're doing with it, and they got to taste the full panoply of the experience, and we were pretty happy with that.
Can you give us a hint of one of those sauces?
One of the sauces we're doing is sort of like an Asian version of ranch dressing that has a lot of really unusual ingredients in it.
And Asians love ranch. My mom and dad love ranch. And they love, They love Thousand Island actually more.
That's more of a burger condiment. I think ranch goes really well with the chicken, and we're also doing these white chocolate mashed potatoes with the chicken as well, so you'll have like two textures with chocolate.
Excellent. You're working on a jillion other things, and I'm not even going to try to go down that list because some of it is still top secret.
Yeah.
So what can we talk about and update everybody on?
Well, this week we just opened Roadhouse LA, which is a modern barbecue restaurant here in West Hollywood. The chef is from New York City, Robbie Richter, who you all may remember, who was the pitmaster at Batty Q and Hill Country before that, Hill Country Barbecue. And it's very non-traditional barbecue. We're doing a lot of unusual meats that you don't see in barbecue places. So instead of just like brisket and ribs, we're doing those and the traditional stuff, but we're also doing lambs and, you know, heads and things like that. We have a head of the day.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah, it is. I'm actually going to eat it tonight again for the second time.
Amazing.
You need like 10 friends to do it, but it's like a giant, huge pig head that comes out of the smoker with lots and lots of meat on it.
I'm going to bring 9 of my friends to L.A. ASAP. What is the opening date of Choco Chicken?
Choco Chicken, we don't have a firm date because we're under construction, but we're projecting late March.
Okay.
So about, you know, 2 months out-ish.
So how about advice for folks now that you have this, you know, you're really smart business partners, got to meet Lee Weinberg, you're doing a lot of other stuff. It can be multi-unit, it can be high-end. What not everyone may know is that Adam also is behind Red Medicine, which is a fine dining concept in L.A. And advice for folks who want to start their own thing, maybe take it to your team. What's interesting to you?
What's interesting to me are concepts or chefs that are differentiated. So they're kind of doing their own thing, you know. They're not really trying to follow any trends. They're not trying to do anything that's been done. They're just following what their own passion is and what they feel like cooking.
All right.
So, I mean, I was just in New York. I went to Mission Cantina. That's a great example. I mean, you have a chef who never really even cooked Mexican food before, but he decided to just stick his neck out there and do it. And
risked it getting chopped off. I mean, there's so many eyes on, you know, the big names.
And that happens.
Yeah,
that happens. But at least I like people that take risks, and those are the people I want to work with in pretty much everything I do.
All right.
So,
all about the risks. And we're going to hear from you again at the end of this show to wind it down, because not everyone knows that you have a journalism and a wine background. Surprise, surprise. So we'll catch you in a bit.
Sounds great.
Thanks. Welcome back to the studio. I'm your host, Leyti Su, and you're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyti Su on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. That was Adam Fleischman, founder of Umami Burger, and working on a bunch of other stuff. Some social media info before we get started with our in-studio guests. Hashtag WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW, that's short for Word of Mouth. At Heritage_Radio, we're a nonprofit. Follow us, support us, retweet us. At Chef Holzman, that's Daniel Holzman, founder of At Meatballers. And they like to write it all in caps, which is what I like to do, too. And Adam's just at Umami Burger, at Umami Burger. And now for People We Like.
People We Like!
Well, welcome, Daniel.
Holzman.
Holzman. Hello, Daniel Holzman.
How are you?
How you doing?
Very good. Thank you for trekking out here.
I'm so excited to be only 4 blocks from my house. It was pretty easy.
Trying to make things easy for you.
I appreciate you moving the studio.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I make magic happen. I get stuff done. So this isn't your first rodeo in life at Heritage Radio. You've been on a couple times.
This is not my first merry-go-round.
Mm-mm. So Daniel has a ziggy-zaggy background. He's people may not know this about you, but you once started an ice cream novelty concept, which now I can find us in Whole Foods.
Yeah, we have I think maybe 11,000 or 12,000 supermarkets across the country where you can find it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then I looked it up. It's a Rice Krispie outside with an ice cream inside.
Yeah, like, you know, the Umami guys are not the only people that cater to stoners.
and then you can find this stuff at, I'm just going to shout it out, www.qbtreats.com. Check it out. It's something that I feel like I really like want to eat, you know. So you also started your first cooking job at the age of 15 at Le Bernardin.
Yeah, I worked at a fancy restaurant very young. I got super lucky. Not my first cooking job, mm-hmm. though. I think I worked at a vegan restaurant on the Upper East Side before that, and a Mexican restaurant maybe before that. So when I open my Mexican restaurant, it won't be for lack of experience.
Daniel was working diligently on his laptop while we were having this conversation with Adam, so he's a really good multitasker, I'm learning.
Yeah, I can both listen and send emails.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't like it when they're really trying to talk to you. They hate that.
Okay.
They want you to, like, they want your full attention.
Mm-hmm.
My full attention is never available.
Got it.
If you want me to just stare at you and listen, then chances are I'm not really paying attention. I'm, like, off in the clouds.
You're really good at the looking like you're paying attention, though, because you have a very straightforward way about you, and you're a big starer.
Yeah, you stare at the eyes. I've learned how to do this. It's like an ADD thing. You learn how to pretend like you're paying attention.
Got it. Well, our weaknesses are also our strengths.
My strengths are definitely my weaknesses.
And we learn how to work around them as we get further in years,
older.
And more experienced. You grew up in the Upper East Side.
Right? I grew up on the Upper East Side, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what did your parents do?
My mom it was and is a secretary for a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And my pop was a cabinet maker.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a wood shop in the Bronx. And now he's retired in Los Angeles.
Okay. What moved you to, I mean, lots of folks get started in the kitchen to make those extra bucks, or, you know, because they just, that's where they land up early in their life, and then they realize they're kind of good at it. So what moved you as a boy to start working in kitchens?
When I was just a boy.
Oh, when you were just a boy.
Me and Geppetto. Yeah. When I was just a boy working in the kitchen, you know, I love working in the kitchen. It's the one thing that has kept me excited for all of the years that I've done it. So I've tried a lot of different jobs and I've done a bunch of different stuff, but Usually I get bored after about 6 months.
Mm-hmm, but what was that? What were you thinking as a boy, though? I want to go really, really long, long time ago.
Like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
I was thinking, I'm gonna get some cheddar. I mean, I was thinking I could make some money.
Okay.
Legally.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it, specifically.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents cook?
My mom was a cook, yeah. My father had a couple of dishes that are pretty delicious. But my mother was a really adventurous cook, and she supported me.
Favorite mom's dish?
I loved blintzes. She made great blintzes.
Oh, man.
She made great blintzes. She made...
savory, sweet, both?
You know, like Jewish.
Okay.
So cottage cheese on the inside and sour cream and applesauce.
Mm-hmm.
So Swedish.
So your mom's Jewish?
And my dad's Jewish.
And Jewish
we're
as well.
We're all Jews.
Okay.
We're like a real Jewish family.
Mm-hmm.
If you got any, yeah, if you got any more Jewish, you'd be Hasidic.
So then how did you get that job at Le Bernardin?
I was working at a vegan restaurant as a delivery boy, and I would spend some time in the kitchen. And a dear friend of mine, who I was like madly in love with, her father, around the corner, they lived, and he was the maitre d' at Le Bernardin.
Mm-hmm.
And he found me over there at the restaurant in the kitchen. And it was pretty exciting. He said, well, if you want to cook, you can come to work at my restaurant, and maybe you can learn something.
He just, like it was sort of just as a, like you were just a boy, he didn't know that you had any skills or...
No, but I was like 13 years old and I was working in the kitchen, which is kind of like somewhat uncommon in New York or restaurants in America. So, you know, he thought maybe as a friend he could, I didn't realize how, you know, like I didn't know what Le Bernardin was. I think I'd been out to like 4 restaurants in my life, maybe Burger King or something. And I got to go and watch the service, and, you know, I worked after school one day a week and on the summers. I didn't do very much. I was just kind of learning with them, or just watching.
Brunoising carrots?
Not even.
Not even.
Like cleaning calamari.
Okay.
You know, I cleaned a lot of calamari.
Okay.
Like, I'm really good at that. Probably. I haven't done it in years, but I'd probably just, like, pick it right back up. No problem.
It's like riding a bicycle, cleaning calamari.
I've heard it's like riding a bike, cleaning calamari.
So you have a, by the way, was that your first big crush, this gal who then led you to Le Bernardin?
You know, I don't remember, because I think when you're really young, there were a couple of girls that I played house with that I was pretty excited about.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I remember there was one of my babysitter's sister. I remember being really into her. I have a couple of friends from when I was in the 4 and 5 year range.
That I 4 or 5 years old?
Yeah, I knew that I was interested in women and their minds and their bodies from a very young age. Yeah, like right away.
Like out of the womb, basically.
I don't think so. It wasn't gross or anything. Yeah. But like, you know, it came with cognizant thought.
You're an early bloomer on many fronts.
I'm an early bloomer on many fronts. But that means I might wilt and die early as well. Maybe I'm like not going to make it very far.
Well, you seem to be doing pretty okay right now.
Yeah, well, that's what I always say, you know. Mm-hmm. You got to live like... I never said that. It's okay.
So New York versus L.A., you know, I have to say that when I learned that you worked at this restaurant called... It's spelled A-X-E, but you're supposed to pronounce it Ashe. And it's in this, like, cute beachside neighborhood in Venice, L.A., I was surprised, because that's somewhere I went when, you know, I attended UCLA, and
oh, you used to go to Ashe?
I did, yeah.
Wow.
A former boyfriend took me.
A former boyfriend took you to Ashe. Well, he was a good guy.
It really got accolades.
Ashe was one of the first, there were a few restaurants on Abbot Kinney in Venice that's now, you know, I think GQ coined it the hippest street in America.
It's pretty cute, but it's not that hip. I mean,
it's pretty fucking hip. I mean, it's as hip as it gets, for Christ's sake. But, it, I mean, literally, it is the hippest street in America, apparently. So, Ashe was one of the early restaurants that was on that block. There were a couple before it, but it was one of the first kind of like organic restaurants over there. Mm-hmm. And the lady that runs it, Joanna, still owns it and runs it. They had a fire, but she rebuilt it the same way. She has an amazing eye for design and great taste.
Yep.
And the restaurant is really good. And, you know, every time I go back to L.A., I pop back in and the same people are working there, which is a great sign something's going well.
Mm-hmm.
The neighborhood has grown up around it, but she stayed true to her values. She buys everything at the farmer's market, mm-hmm. which was an amazing experience for me. I learned how to, you know, shop at the farmer's market, and really it gave me a you know, coming from New York where, especially, you know, where I was learning how to cook maybe in the 90s, which is some time ago, seasonality and farmer's market wasn't as important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like you could freeze stuff and it didn't matter. Now the diners are much more savvy.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So I think Abbot Kinney is really super hip.
Super hip.
Partly because it's the oasis of yumminess and hipness in the big sprawl that is LA that that I didn't personally particularly enjoy, and then Adam closed your ears, and then LA versus New York. You spend some time in
I've lived in both cities, you know. I love L.A. and it has amazing things. I think people make the mistake of going to L.A. and looking for, you know, you look for the stuff that you liked about your last city.
Uh-huh.
If you try and do that, you're going to be lost, you know. L.A. doesn't have the stuff that New York has. But vice versa, if you come to New York looking for what L.A. has, you'll be sorely, you know, disappointed. So, frankly, I think both are amazing cities. And depending upon, you know, where I am, I'm happy. Because you bring happiness with you.
Okay, so as a self-righteous...
I just want you to just remember that. Like, you bring happiness with you.
I think that. So, too.
I've been reading the Dalai Lama's recent autobiography, and he says that in it. And I just kind of, like, quoted him.
Mm-hmm.
I just quoted the Dalai Lama on your show.
Mm-hmm. You're a big reader.
I just bought it all the way around. I'm not, like, a huge reader, but...
You...
This shit just got very serious.
You have a couple books on...
I had a couple books under this belt.
On tap.
Had a couple notches in the old book belt. You
mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Book belt.
If you feel me.
Yep. Not the Bible belt, but
you know,
the book,
I'm throwing
book
down belt. Here. I read the Bible even, so I could, like, you throw did. The Bible on the Bible book belt.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's good friendly ammunition for a Jewish boy from New York.
You know, the Bible, interestingly enough, was originally written by a Jew.
That's right.
And then they had the New Testament was written about a Jew. So it's, like, you know, pretty Jewish.
I had my first matzo ball soup experience in L.A. That was also that same former boyfriend. It made me very happy. I just like to know that every culture, their kids get to have a chicken soup. They get to have a dumpling. They get to have a meatball.
Most people are lucky enough to have meatballs, dumpling, and chicken soup. Yeah, I agree. I think chicken soup is like, you know, I associate that with my grandma.
Really?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
What country was she born?
She's American. Yeah, we're like a very deeply American family, and I actually have American family. We have the passenger manifest from the boats that came over from Poland in the, you know, early 1800s with my family. They came over. They were like rabbis in Bialystok, Poland, and they came over, and then they lived in the Lower East Side.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a restaurant on Stanton Street. And from
the very first one,
the first one, and from the doorway of that restaurant, if you look catty corner cross Orchard, you can see the apartment where my great 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 grandmother was born, married, and died.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
New York, the limited real estate is fascinating. Yesterday, I learned that Danielle, the private dining room of Danielle, used to be the former Le Cirque. Did I get that right?
You know. I don't know that. I don't know about that.
That's just, I mean, I learned that yesterday.
All I know is that his new cookbook is amazing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really great. He's like, of all the people in the food world, he might be the nicest, coolest guy and most talented guy. If you combine all three of those things into like a FICA score or something, he's like, he's got the highest score. He's cool, kind, he's amazing. That guy is my favorite, Danielle.
Danielle, okay.
He's my absolute favorite, and I think he's got a swell name.
Danielle Ballou.
That's the guy we're talking about.
Okay.
The man in charge. You should try and get him on the show. See if he come out. Come out to the show.
They are.
You know, that's the thing. That's why he's so fucking cool, because he probably would come out here.
Of course. Like, I mean, he's probably already been on Heritage Radio, maybe.
Maybe, but I don't know if he's ever had.
Well, thank you for the show suggestion.
I'm doing my best.
After this short commercial break, we're going to find out from Daniel how he and partner Michael Cherno met on the steps of a New York institution. Stay tuned.
You are listening to Born Day by TaxStar on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue.
The National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to the studio. This is Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And I'm Leyte. And in the studio, we have Daniel Holzman, founder, co-founder, chef partner of the Meatball Shop. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
How you doing?
We're back.
And you I just want to say thank you for making me very comfortable. I feel very comfortable right now.
Really?
Yeah, I got my feet up. It's awesome.
Well, I mean, I think you made yourself comfortable.
I hate being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the most important things to know about me.
Well, I do what I can.
I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like nice and warm in here, and it's cold out.
My goal with my interviews is, and the time that we spend in this little cocoon of a studio in the back of Roberta's Pizza, is...
K-I-R. Keep it real.
Keeping it real.
Keep it real, girl.
And making it so that it's, you know, one of the more enjoyable interviews that you do, because you get interviewed a lot.
I've never understood it, but yes.
Hmm. Okay. I have a question for you. How did you meet Michael?
My best friend and partner, Michael Chernow.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents both worked in the same office. And I was 1 year ahead of him, and I went to LaGuardia High School. Mm-hmm. I played the flute in the orchestra.
The flute?
I did. I just pulled it out the other day, and my fingers were a little rusty, but they definitely know how to chirp away. And Michael's mother got talking to my mother, and Michael was going to be attending LaGuardia High School the next year. He's going to be playing the tuba. And so they suggested that maybe it would be a good idea for him to have a friend coming in. And so we met on the Metropolitan Museum of Art steps. And I was riding a bicycle. And he was rocking his rollerblades. He didn't have his tuba with him at the time. But we got to talking on the Met steps. And we became best friends right away. And, you know...
How old were you again?
I must have been 14. He was 13.
Okay.
And he was... You know, we were like 13 and 14 years old. But Mike was always cool. He was, like, always cool. Everybody always was. He was just a
He's
cool
pretty
kid.
Cool, yeah. He oozes cool.
Epitomizes cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
But so do you.
No.
In a different way.
That's not true. I'm like cool, the he doesn't really give that much of it, or he pretends like he doesn't give a shit kind of cool. Mike is like, I'm actually cool.
Why is there ever any pretending, though? I don't think you need to pretend.
You don't need to pretend, but, you know, that's just the unfortunate part about life.
Mm-hmm.
As we pretend mm-hmm. all day long.
So...
Like, I desperately care what you think about me, and yet I pretend like I don't give a shit.
Doing a pretty good job of that. So you're more of a flute guy, and Michael's more of a tuba
guy. Yeah,
I'm
like a flautist, and he's a tuba guy. If that doesn't just kind of set the stage for what's really cool and what's not... when it came to picking an instrument, I was like, I would like an instrument that would fit in my backpack. Because my big brother was 5 years older. This was third grade, mind you. He had his violin. And, you know, he used to let me walk with him to school if I carried his violin. That paints a really bad picture of him. He's like the most generous, kind, loving, wonderful man in the world, and I couldn't thank him enough for being the best big brother ever.
Aww.
But at the time, I used to carry his violin a couple steps back. And I was like, well, fuck that. When I have an instrument to pick, I'm going to pick something that fits in my backpack. So I picked the smallest. I picked the piccolo. but my, you know, my, I think my teacher was like, listen, if you haven't come out of the closet yet, I'm going to give you the flute just to give you like a, some chance. And Michael, on the other hand, he's like the cool dude, you know? So he will brave, he'll brave having to carry a big instrument or having to wear, you know, something that's cold in the winter or all that stuff that you have to do to be cool.
Right.
Because you got to do shit that's uncomfortable to be cool.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm practical and comfortable.
Like that. Yep.
Yeah.
I found it surprising just to... I was also in band for a moment. And I remember that
You must have played the violin. Not because you're Asian, but I'm just calling it.
Okay. My little sister played the violin.
Uh-huh.
So we have something in common.
Fair enough.
One thing. And...
What did you play?
I played the clarinet, and I'm...
Oh, that's a great instrument.
I really wanted to play... I'm kind of envious of you. I really wanted to play the flute because it's so feminine and pretty, and I wanted to be that.
Can I just say that I own a clarinet. I have it at my house. That was actually the instrument that I picked. I picked the clarinet because I wanted to bend notes and play jazz. I desperately wanted that. And unfortunately... I got picked the flute, which is not as cool an instrument because the clarinet is both small and cool. That was actually the instrument that I chose, and
so
they gave me the flute.
What? So that's hilarious because they had too many flutes because my community had a lot of Asian people, and
so it was like flutes and violins.
And
all
so
over
then,
the place.
So then, all these other little Asian girls played the flute,
mm-hmm.
and so they had too many flutes, and so they gave me the violin. I mean, the clarinet.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the clarinet is an amazing instrument. It really is. It's one of the great jazz instruments that I love.
We should have switched places as.
I would love. It's teenagers. Got such a soft. It's just so soft, you know.
The sensitive side of Daniel Holzman.
I'm extremely sensitive on the interior. On the exterior, I really hold my cards to my, you know. Closely to my chest.
Mm. And you ask really good questions, by the way.
I ask questions?
You're good at, not right now because I'm interviewing you, but in general conversation, you're good.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So what, many partnerships in business, in startups, in restaurants, what makes the partnership between you and Michael work so well? And it is scary to go into business with a best friend.
Yeah, I think that what makes our partnership work so well is that it's authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it took us a really long time to figure out how to work together. We've always been best friends, and we've stayed friends throughout the entire experience. But working together, we hated each other at times.
Really?
And it was really tough. And it threatened our friendship. But, you know, if somebody said, I want to go into business with my best friend... I would never say, well, you should definitely not do that. But I would say, hey, you should be really cautious to set some ground rules from the outset,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you can step on each other's toes and you know how to get under each other's skin. And, you know, we competed with each other in a lot of ways unnecessarily. And I think it probably made the business stronger, but it really was tough on our personal relationship. So... I am super thankful that, you know, we made it through the other end of that. We went to couples therapy.
Really?
We went to couples therapy for about 8 months, trying to learn how to draw boundaries because, you know, your best friend, if he's really your best friend, you say fuck you to him. But your business partner, you're never supposed to say fuck you to your business partner. I mean, realistically, unless it's like the end of the relationship, unless they're like breaking up.
Mm-hmm.
And so... You know, we were comfortable, you know, getting into an argument in front of everybody because that's kind of what we do. We've always had that relationship. I mean, we one of
family.
Our first, you know, one of our first big fights was at the lunchroom at LaGuardia High School. I was being kind of a pretentious dickhead, which is par for the course. Mm-hmm. And Mike, he threw a tater tot at me. And I jumped over the lunchroom table. And I started strangling him. I punched him in the face. And, I mean, over the table. Like, I have a very bad temper, so I didn't even, like, go around. And I just punched him in the face. At which point, like, the security guard stopped us and started, and I started walking away. And then Mike ran up from behind and punched me in the back of the head. And that's, like, one of his classic Michael Chernow moves, is, like, punching you in the back of the head. At which point, we both got arrested. Or, no, we didn't get arrested. We both got suspended. And,
wow.
And then... And we were like friends because, like, literally the next day in suspension, I was like, "Yo, what are you up to? You don't have to go to school, right? What are you doing, bro?"
So you made the first move afterwards.
I don't remember whether he called me or I called him, but I think he was pretty actually pissed because he got in trouble. And at the time, I was like 1 year further ahead, so we were both really good students in the beginning, and then it's kind of deteriorated. And so I was like a little further into my deterioration. He was still pretty. I think that was like the first time he ever got suspended.
Aye, aye, aye.
By the end of it, though, it was like, LaGuardia High School was not very strict.
Mm-hmm. What's your, you know, as the mommy and the daddy and the daddy of this family?
He's definitely the mommy.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's got an amazing pair of tits, that guy. Have you ever seen him with his shirt off? Just check his Instagram. It's really...
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's selfie central.
What's his Instagram handle?
At Michael Chernow.
Okay. I'm going to do that.
At Michael Chernow.
And are you on Instagram as well?
Hell yeah.
What are you?
At Chef Holzman.
Oh, you guys are so social media savvy.
Yeah, I keep this shit for real. It's so easy when you keep it consistent. The only one that was tough is at Meatballers, because people are like, "What up, at Meatball Shop?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we're at Meatballers." And we are Meatballers, and that's cool, but cool isn't like... Social media is not cool. It's like, it is more practical than cool. Like, hashtags are not cool. There's nothing cool about a hashtag. It's just practical.
Yep, it is. We like to be practical. So, my last question for you.
This is your last question? We're done?
We're done,
Holy S-H-I-T.
Did that go by really quickly? Like, I hope that was totally painless.
That was an hour in 38 minutes, because it was only 38 minutes.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. Because
it's 10:41. And we started at 10:03.
Are you disappointed that we
No, I'm just saying that it's an hour in 38 minutes. It's very quickly.
Okay. How is it an hour and 38 minutes?
An hour in 38 minutes.
Okay, got it. Dream job. What is your dream job outside of cooking, being a businessman, being a restaurateur?
My dream job?
Mm-hmm. You've told me this before, thinking really hard.
Yeah, because I'm really actually thinking about it. I spout off a lot of crap.
Okay.
Because I probably told you I would be a congressman or a plumber. But that's just like my go-to. I think if I really had a dream job, I always wanted to be an engineer.
An engineer?
Yeah, I always wanted to be an engineer. I love the idea of engineering.
And why is that?
I like the idea of... I mean, it's obviously very practical. I'm a practical person. I like the understand. They have a very deep understanding of the way the world and things work and force and matter. I'm really interested in physics and science. And they, you know, depending upon the type of engineering that you do, I would want to be a structural engineer and build things that lasted and, you know, build things that you knew that you could point to. I like the idea of being able to point to something and saying, "I built that." My dad built the bar at Union Square Cafe.
Really?
Yeah. He built the bar there. He's a woodworker.
Wow.
In like 100 years ago, whenever it was built. And, you know, every time we would pass by, he'd go, "Hey, you know," not thinking that it was a fancy restaurant, because at the time it didn't really, fancy restaurant didn't matter to us, or we didn't know what fancy meant. He would just point to that bar and say, like, you know, "I built that bar." And then we'd be passing by some other place and say, you know, "Oh, I put the lobby in that place." And there's this pride of knowing that you did something that still exists, you know?
Which is what we want for the meatball shop.
Except for the part where the meatballs get eaten right away. Like, they don't exist anymore except for, you know.
Thank you so much, Daniel.
This has been a huge pleasure. I appreciate it.
And
I came for the pizza. And I stayed for the conversation.
Thank you. We'll be having some pizza after the show. And to wind it down, we're going to welcome back Adam Fleischman from L.A., founder of Umami Burger.
Can I hang out with Adam Fleischman too?
Yes. I thought you guys saw each other in L.A.
I just saw him in New York.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Nice to have you back on.
Thank you.
All right, so I have a couple quick questions for you. One,
sure.
Your favorite wet red wine and your favorite white wine of right now from your cellars.
My favorite particular wine. I mean, it's always warm here in LA, so I'm big on champagnes, which are kind of my favorite. So that's what I'm into.
What's
right
your
now.
Favorite champagne, man? Let's talk turkey.
Oh, there's so many.
That's Daniel from Meatball Shop.
You don't have a favorite producer or a favorite
negociant? I like Jacques Belos.
Wow,
that's one of the ones I really like. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a farmer stuff, and I like the big brands too. I like them all.
Okay, so
the 04 Dom Perignon is particularly good. Just came out. Mm-hmm. Definitely buy it.
Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough.
It's amazing.
What do you have?
Nothing.
Okay. So,
I ain't got shit.
You got umami wine. We're gonna.
We
close.
Do. We do. We just created our own umami wine from California grapes. That kind of had a meaty, sort of greasy aroma to it.
Mm. All right. So there's three grapes in it. It was a Grenache, Carignan, and Mourvedre.
Hey, since
Mourvedre. It's mostly Mourvedre, which is like a Rhone grape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how does it? Why did you choose these grapes and this producer to make this wine to pair with your burgers?
Well, the producer was a friend of ours. We really liked his wines. They're called the Field Recordings series of wines. And we picked those grapes because they have sort of the Rhone grapes sort of have kind of a meaty, animalistic quality to them, which pair well with meaty dishes like meatballs or burgers.
Excellent. And we can get it at the New York City Umami Burger locations?
Yeah, or any of the ones in California as well.
Okay. Well, gee, thank you for coming back on. And hello from New York to LA. And I have one last question for you. New York versus LA. Food and otherwise.
Don't front. Come on, my man.
I think New York is way better because your radio show is in New York.
Booyaka.
The food is much better, but you know what? There's more fun here in L.A. and more romance, so go L.A.
I'm having a lot of romance here in New York. I don't know what you're talking about.
We have better surfing here in New York.
Surfing.
We don't have to put on snow boots for romance here in L.A.
All right.
I'm wearing shorts right now.
All right. Simmer down, fellas. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Leyte. Bye, guys.
This is Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on Heritage Radio Network. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.